Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Chris.
Thursday edition of Point Taken, my edition, because Kristen's off today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Jazz, for that splendiferous open. Love that. I got a lot of comments about that yesterday. I'm going to keep doing that when I'm working by myself because I love that. Brings the energy. How about some energy for the president? Oof, what a transition. What a segue. Maybe he's not getting that ballroom. Did you hear the latest on that story? Senate Republicans have said they don't have the votes for the Trump ballroom. The president is blaming the parliamentarian, a woman, no surprise there, for blocking the request. But Republican leaders said they don't have the votes. $1 billion ballroom that we don't need, necessarily. Unfortunate part is the East Wing's already laying on the ground. Actually, the rubble's gone. It's just a hole in the ground and sort of some things happening. But this is the problem when doing stuff without congressional approval, because they, well, at least they're supposed to, control the purse strings. Our money, which we're going to get to in the next segment, the exploding federal deficit. Well, a nod to senior Senator Ron Johnson, who identified the problem at least 15 years ago, maybe longer than that. So what does this mean? We have this idea of a ballroom with an enhanced security feature underneath it. A war room of sorts. President's been talking about the Secret Service needs of this enhanced ballroom. It would dwarf the existing White House, what's left of it. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said, we don't and we can't lock down the votes. Called the reports of the president on Truth Social trying to get rid of the parliamentarian the last thing he's thinking about. There's always this, in this administration, this idea that whatever the White House wants, the White House gets. And I'm not going to sit here and say the president doesn't have power. The president has a lot of power, especially this one. The president has taken us to war. This president has upended the markets. He's upended the trade tariffs, import-export world. We've had tons of guests talking about that. Now, one of the president's pals is South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. He said, it's a work in progress, direct quote. We'll see what happens when we get on the floor. This is one of those days when, or weeks, I should say, that we're just all sitting here going, one, do we need a ballroom? And two, why? Why are we having these conversations when gas is, I was in Chicago last week, and $5 plus? How's that working out for you? If you're in Chicago, driving, listening to this show, thank you, first off. Two, $5 plus gas, and the Cubs suck. What's the third strike in that equation? The Bears don't do what they're supposed to do? Sustain, maintain? It's tough to be a Chicago sports fan, isn't it? I heard one of the sports hacks, former writer turned broadcaster, saying that Craig Counsell's an average coach. I don't know how you define that sports hack, but no, not even close. He's probably the best thing to happen to your team. When your team underperforms, not always the coach's responsibility. Sometimes it is. I don't think so, though. And his record would dictate that's not the case. Anyway, no ballroom right now. No ballroom for the president. You think he'll react calmly and make the case in a different way? Or why doesn't he just call up Elon Musk and say, can you just pay for it? You have like $700 billion. Can you just throw a one-ster at us, a $1 billion? Think Elon Musk would step it up? Probably. And that's maybe it, just maybe that's how it gets funded until at some point, probably in the near future, there's so many lawsuits that it's just going to sit. And on this day in May of 2026, I would not be shocked if this thing is still not done well after President Trump is escorted out of the White House. We'll see what happens. After the break, $39 trillion. Ron Johnson, senior senator of Wisconsin. Yeah, he was right. But what do we do about it? Some thoughts after this. James Dean. James Dean. So hungry. Thanks for tuning in on this Kristenless Thursday. She'll be back tomorrow along with Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, our political strategist friends. Occasional enemies, just kidding, Bill and Joe. Smart guys talking about politics, the week in politics, and boy, lots of things to talk about. Here's a dazzling detail. That's for you, Wex. It took 200 days in the United States to go from $38 trillion in debt to $39 trillion. 200 days, not even a whole year. Trillion, not B, T, trillion. That is, first of all, astounding. And, you know, looking at the current occupant of the White House, he talks a good game, but he's doing nothing to stop this. Want to know? Here's another dazzling detail. You know what we add every day to the, right now, the current pace? $5 billion per day to the national deficit. Anybody think that's normal behavior? I don't think so. $5 billion a day. So, I mentioned this last week. And I always get the response, I don't know if it's Kristen or somebody else, said, well, defense spending. So I looked it up. A few things just to sort of parse this out. Most of the money goes to Social Security, and stop the text before you even start to write them. Yes, you pay in. But right now, we're sucking out a lot more that's going in. And for many, many Americans, you pay a percentage of what you actually get in benefits. Mostly because of time. What you paid 40 years ago is not what you're getting. Paid in is not what you're getting now. That's the reality. I'm not criticizing Social Security. That's just the way it is. And I'll get back to Social Security because there's a way to fix it that actually should have been done a long time ago. We just keep talking about this. What's number two? Medicare and Medicaid. Social Security was 21%. Medicare, Medicaid, they're also up there. Trillions of dollars. Here's where it gets interesting. You know what the interest is on the $39 trillion? 13%. As much as we spend on our national defense, we pay an interest on our debt. Also not normal behavior for anyone that manages budgets. Texter makes the point, national debt has been raised more by Republicans than Democrats. True. It's uncomfortable as a Republican, but that's the truth. I think the last president to have a balanced budget was Bill Clinton. And if you would ask me if I didn't know that fact, I would say that's nuts, but that's the truth. Throw in veterans benefits at 5%, well-earned and deserved, don't cut them. Education, transportation, housing, science in the 8 to 10% range. Other government operations, the pencils, papers, computers, all of that stuff, 5 to 7%. Until we actually do some real work on spending. And I get shared a lot of things on email and text line. And people say, what are you doing about this? How are we going to get this fixed? And we can't possibly spend less because there's just such a need for healthcare. All these things are great arguments. I just heard a candidate, Graham Platner, Maine, senator, candidate. When asked about, how are you paying for all the stuff you want to do for the working class? He pointed to defense. Not even the biggest piece of the pie. Could we save money on defense? Sure. Make smarter decisions? Sure. How about not going to war? That might be a brilliant way to chop that expense. But let me get back to Social Security. Again, not a opponent of Social Security. We all pay it in. I paid in for 45 years or whatever it is. You deserve to get that money. But here's the thing. It's capped. So when you get your wages, the most you can be taxed at for the year is $184,500. you pay 6.2% Social Security payroll tax on that first $184,000. Above that, none. No one's a fan of taxes, but that number is not relevant anymore. If you make $250,000 or $300,000 or $500,000 or $1 million, you should be paying more in. Because that would help resolve one of our crises, which is we don't control our budget. We spend too much based on what we're taking in. So I mentioned Ron Johnson, senior senator from Wisconsin. He was right about this. The first time I ever met Ron Johnson, I went to one of his presentations. This has got to be 15 years, maybe 20 years ago. And I was speaking on something else, and I wandered into a room. He was talking about the federal deficit. He had charts and graphs, which he likes to do. And he pointed it out then, and probably the debt many years ago was probably half of what it is now, maybe not even that much. No one is serious about this. So if you're a candidate or an elected official and you don't have an actual plan, not on the spending side, we get you want stuff. We get you want better health care. We bet that you want everything that you can get for free. Student loan repayments, child care credit. Yes, all great, noble ideas. But you have to pay for it. Ask any local village president, mayor, local leader about budgets, and they'll tell you this. And that we seem to forget it at the higher levels. You can't spend more than you take in. It just, the math doesn't work. But yet at the federal level, math doesn't matter. I was reading this morning arguments that presidents made this argument. We're under leveraged, whatever it is, $39 trillion, $78 trillion, doesn't matter, because the country's worth so much more than that. But it ignores this glaring fact that the interest on our debt is growing by percentage every year, now 13% of our debt. And at some point, the debt comes due. So excuse me if when I hear ads or I talk or interview electeds or candidates and you talk about what we don't have. What we do have is a spending problem, and we better address it at some point in the near future. I give you one example, Social Security. Remove that cap. Take it up to $500,000. It's more realistic given how much some people make now. If you don't like it, I'm sorry, but we got to start fixing these problems. We can spend better on defense. There are many programs that we can be more efficient with, including health care. And I'll say this again, because DOGE was not the agency we thought it was going to be, or at least Bill McCosh thought it was going to be. It was a mistake. It was led by a savant who's also an idiot in many ways, Elon Musk. I just saw a proposal, his stock IPO. One of the caveats was, what, 1 million people on Mars at some point? Like, shut up. This is just absolutely insane stuff we're talking about. The numbers are astronomical, upsetting, and should cause you to worry. Because at some point, they're unsustainable. So don't come at me with, I want this, or we need this, or we need to be better at providing this. How are you going to pay for it? And don't just say defense spending. It's a small part, not the biggest part of our budget. Quick break. To the limit, one more time. Yeah, debt limit. That's what our country seems to be intent on. $39 trillion took us 200 days to get from 38 to 39. Thanks, Congress. Thanks, Mr. President. I should actually go back to President Biden and Obama and previous presidents, all since Clinton, who had hit the last balanced budget. How about that? A lot of people had comments on the text line, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk text line about Elon Musk and Doge. That was a waste of a lot of things, including our time and our money. Accomplished little of anything. The idea is noble. It's a good idea to detect fraud, eliminate waste, but to just hack things, even the folks in manufacturing know what Lean Six Sigma is. There's an order to that process. you know, getting leaner, getting better at what you do, in that case, product manufacturing, but it's been utilized in all kinds of industries now. That's an organized process. Doge was a mess. It was a stroke for the president. It is a waste of our resources, not a way to get our resources back. And that's the ultimately the legacy for me of Elon Musk. And I've had arguments with friends who think he's a genius, perhaps, but he's also a complete idiot in a lot of different ways. And he demonstrates it loudly each and every day. After the break for news with Neil Doyle, America's favorite newsman, we will have Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com. Lots to talk about today. Wonder what he's going to start with. All right, local news updates before any or all of that. Thanks for listening, by the way.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken.
Always one of our most popular hours of the week. A little bit earlier today because, of course, we have Salute to Service today. We've got a great, great honoree today from the Milwaukee Fire Department. Longtime vets, a heavy equipment operator who saved lives. And wait to hear the feature that Jazz put together. It's amazing. And wait till you meet him in person at 11:35. All right, Jeremy Janine, first of all, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
For those folks who ask, Kristen is on assignment. She'll be back tomorrow for the Bill and Joe Show, as we call it here. But let's get to it. Wisconsin Center District, Marty Brooks, CEO. We had some controversy that we sort of got past, but now there's new information that he may be at some point out of a job.
Yes. When we got off the air last Thursday, I kind of winked and nodded at you guys and said there'd be news coming about a big figure leaving. I had reason to believe it could happen last Friday at the Wisconsin Center District Board meeting. It didn't happen. The board spent 90 minutes in closed session without taking action. They're likely going to come back next week now, and that could very well be the end of Marty Brooks leading the Wisconsin Center District, which he's done since 2018. He built the $456 million Baird Center expansion, and really until December of last year, by everyone's analysis, had done a really good job leading the organization.
Yeah, I mean, mission accomplished, and many people have suggested to me that maybe he should have walked away, retired. I think he's around my age, generally. So I guess the question is, without getting to detail that we can't talk about, this is separate from what happened before. Right.
Yeah. So there was this alleged pinch came to light, which was
we've talked about it on the show.
At length. We talked about that. That triggered this internal investigation. And if you look really closely at the meeting minutes for the Wisconsin Center District Board, and that's a public entity because it's funded with a variety of different taxes, hotel taxes, there's a candy bar tax, a variety of different things fund this entity, which owns the Baird Center, the UW-Milwaukee Panther Arena, and the former Milwaukee Theater, the High Life Theater next to it. So, public entity, the meeting minutes suggest first investigation, wording towards clearly that alleged pinch. Then this last one switches completely to the board may convene in closed session pursuant to the state open records law to consider the employment, compensation, or performance evaluation data of certain WCD employees over which the board has jurisdiction or exercises responsibility. So no mention of the pinch anymore.
Yeah.
And in talking with multiple sources, that's not what is being leading to his removal. It's concerns about other things that they're unearthing going back as far as 2024 about the process around this big study about a convention center hotel and kind of things that might have been said behind the door to other officials that might have leases like UWM, Milwaukee Admirals, as well as just some things that Marty Brooks might have done that are not criminal at all, but that the board is not happy with.
Uncomfortable with might be.
Yes, term. Fair.
And I've interviewed him once, if not twice. I don't know him well. Is there an argument or a defense being made by a community member or a leader that says, we want Marty to stick around? Is that being stated out there anywhere?
There's not, because no one is also publicly arguing why they want him to go right now. This is largely happening, almost entirely happening behind closed doors. There's only hints at it in these agendas. And then you talk to like Jim Cantor, the board chair. It's like, I can't comment on what's happening, although very clearly Marty Brooks is who they're talking about.
What's the timeline? The next meeting could be
Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm told. The board is soliciting dates that they could all meet. It's a 17-member board, includes state legislators, so it's this big, broad entity, and they're trying to find, looking at their calendars, dates they can get together. I don't yet know if Marty Brooks is going to resign, if they would terminate him, what might happen there. There are some power players that are in the room. John Yingling, I'm told, who is the head of the state park or state fair board, is in heavily involved. He's long been a consultant for the Wisconsin Center District, and he is visibly in those closed session meetings.
TBD is what they say. We'll see what the Wisconsin Center District does with the CEO. All right, we'll take a quick break. He is Jeremy Janine. Does everything at the UrbanMilwaukee.com site. And for the tchotchke folks, what's the address?
755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee Mason, or for you online shoppers, UrbanMilwaukeeTheStore.com.
I will be buying a Old Milwaukee candle. Don't sell all of them. I need one. I need one for my outdoor area.
We got one for you.
All right. What's the cost of it? Do you know?
It's a fair price, around $10.
Okay. All right. No discount? No, I'm just kidding.
For you, we charge double.
That's pale, double for me, a man of means. All right. Jeremy Jean will stick around for the full hour earlier today because we have Salute to Service coming up at 11:35. Stick around. 620 WTMJ. All right. Jeremy Jean, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Some of the best reporting you'll see or read on or hear on Milwaukee News, Milwaukee County, City of Milwaukee. Let's go to...
Let's pivot and go to the second item on this list because it ties into what we talked about before.
All right.
Before.
Well, you go.
All right. So we discussed Marty Brooks. We talked about the Convention Center Hotel study. Marty had the authority to authorize this $145,000 study on his own. He didn't need board approval. The board seems to be upset about that. Robert Bauman, Grady Crosby, several board members have indicated their displeasure with that whole process. Greg Marcus is one of the people that thinks this study was essentially a waste of money. He thinks the hotel industry is not strong enough, but he threw out an option. He said, I'm not suggesting it, but if you wanted to save taxpayer dollars, here's a way you could do it. The Marcus Corporation owns the Hilton Milwaukee Hotel. We've talked how they kind of, that 2000 era addition, they cleaved it off into be the Mark Limited Service Hotel. Right. He says if you're actually looking for a 1,000-room hotel, if that is what the report says, that Milwaukee lacks this huge hotel to book, and Greg Marcus at the same time is saying, and Mark Flaherty, who owns other hotels downtown, that the hotel industry isn't strong. So what you really just need is this big hotel. You could expand the Hilton Milwaukee, and they have the capacity to do it. And Greg says they'd be open to entertaining that discussion without the need for a big study to do that.
I'm a big fan of the Marcus Corp, and I think they understand the dynamics. And it sounds like a cheaper way to do it. Existing area, existing hotel property. I mean, what's the downside?
The downside is Greg Marcus himself doesn't believe that the Milwaukee hotel market can support more hotel rooms at this point.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I love Greg, but they also own like the Pfister and all the
yes.
Yeah, you're competing with yourself at some point.
Yeah, some extent a rational conflict of interest there.
All right, so as far as how that would go forward with that idea, it's just out there?
It's an idea he floated out there. There's a new Wisconsin Center District Committee to be stood up at some point to look at the next steps for a convention center hotel. It all happens under the cloud of whatever's happening with Marty Brooks right now.
Somebody asked, so you know it better than I do. The members of the Milwaukee Center District Board, drop some names.
Sure. So there's three common council members, Jose Perez, Malala Cox, Robert Bauman. The mayor has appointees who are different business leaders. Then the state has, Governor Tony Evers has an appointee. It's Kathy Blumenfeld. There's a Republican senator, Rob Hutton. There's a Republican legislator, Jesse Rodriguez. If you're a political observer, you know both of them are on the way out.
Yeah, so they'll be replaced.
New people coming in.
And that's a gubernatorial appointment?
Those are legislative appointments.
Okay.
And that's...
So depending on leadership.
The county comptroller, the city comptroller. It's on their website. 17 members, okay. A lot of big hitters.
All right. Jumping up to vacant Milwaukee buildings.
Yes. So we have Sellers Absorbent Materials, which they are the makers of, and I'm going to get the list right in front of me, Bravo, CleanTask, Mayfair Cleaning Products. Those are things you can go and buy in store, but they're really for industrial companies to clean up spills. Right. They're a quiet Milwaukee company, started in 1985. They're doing something that's really interesting. They're not only cleaning up industrial spills, but they're cleaning up vacant Milwaukee buildings. They're adding, according to a permit request, their sixth facility now in Milwaukee at 6900 North Tetonia Avenue. That's a smaller 30,000 square foot building, but they already fill a former Sam's Club. They fill a former Lowe's. So a lot of these disused buildings,
right.
This company is growing and year by year seems to be adding more of them. Last year, they added a $15 million facility on Good Hope Road. And every single time, it's repurposing an existing building.
Sort of related, but somebody asked me about this. It was a building in Oak Creek. I'm not going to get into the details because I hear it's going to be filled. If you're a community leader, or a business leader in a community or a citizen of a community. Ask the questions that need to be asked. Why would you sit there and drive by an empty building and never ask, why is that not filled? Ask your leaders. Ask the business leaders in your community. What are you doing? I can give you an example. I'm not going to, but there's examples in my community, Oak Creek, that have been sitting vacant for 2+ years in a very high-profile area. What the hell are you doing with this? If it's not being developed or filled, there's a problem in that chain of command somewhere. Do not wait. So when I see stories like this, this is a good example of someone stepping up, a Milwaukee-owned business, right?
Yep.
That's how it's supposed to work. Don't settle for this stuff. And so much of what happens, this is my rant of this, at least this half hour, so much of what happens is people yakking at meetings and not doing things after meetings. This is a company. Sellers absorb it, right?
Yep.
Absorb it. Yes, they're doing something about it. Well done. We'll take a break. After the break, whenever I see Stadium Freeway, it's always going to be an interesting conversation, right? So we'll get to that with Jerry Maginin, UrbanMilwaukee.com after this. Talking freeways during the break, because we're going to get to freeways here with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Great resource for local news if you're in this part of the state of Wisconsin, or not. If you just want to know what your hometown or your biggest city in the state is up to, you can certainly find it there. All right, the Stadium Freeway Replacement Study.
So what we're talking about is from the stadium interchange, which is right by the ballpark by American Family Field, not actually the interchange itself, but from about Wisconsin Avenue on the north side, 2 miles. It's a stub end freeway because, as we were talking about off air, it was part of this big vision to encircle Milwaukee and freeways that didn't happen for a lot of different reasons. You now have this 2 mile stub going from essentially Wisconsin Avenue up to Lisbon Avenue, roughly North Avenue. And like so many other things we talk about involving freeways, because they're all built at the same time, the bill is coming due at the same time in terms of you need some replacement. There seems to be widespread agreement that the 6-lane configuration for the stadium freeway is not necessary at this point. So then you think about what comes next. Is it a 2-lane road that you can save some money rebuilding it? Is it some type of boulevard option like you see on what is still called Miller Parkway to the south? Is it some hybrid of in between? And starting in 2022, the state actually studied several options for this. And they say there's broad consensus on particularly on the northern stretch, going to a boulevard option.
Yeah,
when you get to about Washington Park, they say there's broad consensus on improving connectivity east-west across it, because that's a challenge right now. Washington Park is a challenge as well, because there's only one road through the middle of Washington Park. But that the development that comes around it, they don't necessarily, they being the neighbors, don't want to see what's happened on Miller Parkway in terms of this massive retail development, but they want to see something consistent with the character of their neighborhood. So they want development, but they want it to look largely like what is there now. That's what the state believes it has agreement on. They worked with the city and county. So in March, they came to the Common Council and said, okay, here's this preview of this report we're going to release. And the reason we're talking about this now is they just released the report. The thing they said, though, the takeaway, and this makes me laugh, is that what's needed next after this multi-million dollar 3-year study effort is a multi-million dollar, $10 to $14 million multi-year study effort that in many respects would have to go back to the drawing board and start again to get, this would be the formal environmental process to get what is known as FONSI, Finding of No Significant Impact in Federal Transportation Planning, that allows you to go forward and actually build whatever you want to build.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's stuff you have to do.
Yeah, you're legally required to do this.
Yeah.
This study we're talking about now beforehand, you weren't required to do that. They just wanted to do that.
I mean, I say this somewhat jokingly, but I'm a guy who appreciates freeways. Even I say this stretch doesn't need a full build out. I would imagine there's consensus on that across the board. I don't care what category of freeway lover or hater you fall into. That does not need to be how many lanes. It build a boulevard connected to the neighborhoods, make it make sense for businesses and the community. How is that hard?
Well, it's apparently $10 to $14 million hard.
Yes, but. That is one. I was talking about the national debt earlier, and why I keep. Well, so one of the reasons there's so many things required, and a lot of environmental studies, very important. I'm not a guy that says just get rid of that, because no, there's reasons why you do that stuff, so you're not polluting somebody else with your project. But there's so many steps in the process. There needs to be lawyers. There needs to be contracts. There needs to be public hearings. All these things add to the cost. So when you're bitching, to use my word, about another study. A lot of this stuff is required.
Yeah, this isn't WISDOT saying, we want to do this.
No.
This is the federal government saying, if you want our money to build this, you got to go through this process. And the reason the state and city and county got into this in the first place is the Biden administration had a Reconnecting Communities grant. They never got that grant. The state thankfully picked up the cost there, but now you're essentially back at zero, needing to move forward again.
Roads cost a lot of money. Last thing I can tell you is people like driving on roads. We'll get to a lot more with Jeremy and Janine after the break. You're sitting through a top of the hour for a change. How about that? We'll get to that after news.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
As I said at the open, Kristen is off on assignment today, and she is working today on her documentary, so she'll tell you all about that when she comes back, hopefully tomorrow. Safe travels, Kristen, if you're listening. How you doing, Jeremy and Janine?
Still here. Happy to be here.
He came, and to his credit, he came in a half hour earlier because we, of course, have Salute to Service, Waterstone Bank, and WTMJ Salute to Service coming up at 11:35 with a great story. They're all great. This one takes us to the Milwaukee Fire Department, a great veteran who did some amazing things Mother's Day last year on a horrible fire that fortunately took some lives. So we'll get to that story at 11:35. Jeremy, let's talk about a name I haven't thought about for a bit of time, but it's a well-known name in Milwaukee circles, Tierman Spencer.
Yeah, so we had a one-term city attorney, Tierman Spencer, who at the end of his term in 2024, a couple months thereafter, he was charged with felony misconduct in office. And the allegation there, to paraphrase it down, is he has a private car collection. He was storing it in a building. And he got a city attorney's opinion, someone that reported to him, an assistant to city attorney, to write a legal opinion that he didn't need an occupancy permit. So he took public resources for private benefit, ended up with a felony charge for that. In the process of that, in 2025, that case was about to go to trial. 2 weeks before that, he gets charged for his role in an alleged shaky real estate transaction. And that involved him and an associate working with someone going through probate court. They essentially bought the house from this person they were working with for a couple thousand dollars, put in some investment in it, and then sold it for $200,000+. And there was questions about practice and propriety of that. And his attorney, William F. Sultan, says that the only reason Tierman got charged with that second shaky real estate transaction felony was because he refused a plea bargain deal on the first case. Well, wouldn't you know it, we get to 2026. We're 2 weeks before Tierman Spencer going to trial for that shaky real estate transactions. We haven't even got to the felony misconduct in office yet. And he gets charged on Tuesday with another felony, this time for what is called bail jumping, but what you'd really call it is witness tampering. Milwaukee County Judge Jorge Fregoso told Spencer, as part of preparing for this trial in June, that he could not contact two key people, Kenar Wegg, who was his associate on the alleged shaky real estate transaction, and then another probate attorney. And Spencer, according to a criminal complaint, which includes a transcript of this voicemail, called this probate attorney, who is identified in our article, I won't identify her on air, and he offers her business. Hey, I have this case I can start. This just happened a couple weeks ago in April. And the criminal complaint alleges, and I'm using air quotes here, that it was a veiled bribe that he was offering her to attempt to steer business her way. And again, the transcripts of the voicemail are in the criminal complaint and largely match the description in the criminal complaint of him offering her business. Sultan tells me yesterday, we deny and dispute any allegations that any crime was committed. Now, I was in the courtroom when Tierman Spencer was told not to contact this individual. Right. And his other individual, he protested, not this individual, but the other individual, for a valid reason, saying, hey, we need to settle up our taxes for this year, so we need to communicate. And there was some discussion of that. Never was it discussed that he could contact this person.
But a transcript shows that he indeed did contact the person.
Yes, and the, not the police department, but the district attorney's office executed a search warrant and has his phone now. And in the process of seizing his phone, he even admits to calling her.
Okay, I'm not an attorney, obviously, but it seems like the behavior is not making things easier for him. And I guess, you know, at some point, when people do things like this, they're trying to get out of something. I get that, the basic understanding. But he's complicating. I understand it was a felony, but sometimes this stuff gets plea dealed down from a non-felony. Or am I wrong on that?
That could happen, but he's refused any plea bargains.
Yeah, I understand, but like, you're just making it worse on yourself. And now the latest bail jumping. Where does this stand now going forward?
So he was supposed to go to trial on June 1st. There is a May 28th hearing on this latest felony charge. I'm guessing that will result in the June 1st trial being delayed. So
All right.
It continues.
Yeah. Somebody said Chairman Spencer for president. Don't think so, but we'll discuss. All right. That's a later date. All right. No leaves, by the way, on the show today.
Oh, we could talk about leaves, though.
You know why I said it? Because I looked up on one of the monitors, and it's still a controversy.
I sat through an hour-long leave discussion yesterday, so you don't have to.
If we have fun time later, we'll do it. All right. After the break, MMSD. We'll talk about her after this. He is Jeremy Janine. He's here every Thursday, most Thursdays. Sometimes we get vacations. And he also does, even though he's a hardworking journalist, in the city of Milwaukee, covering Milwaukee city news and county news. And this one involves, we've talked a lot, not necessarily Chris and I, but the station and the area. We've certainly talked about MMSD. What is the questions that are being asked right now?
Yeah, so we should have talked about this issue already because it's something that's going to last, I'm guessing, a while now. Common Ground in late April launched a campaign targeting not really MMSD, the sewerage district for 20-some communities in the Milwaukee area, but Veolia, the private operator, and how they're overseen. And how that relationship works between Veolia and MMSD is MMSD is a taxing entity that handles every time you flush and every time water falls on the ground. But to operate the Jones Island and South Shore treatment plants, they hire a private contractor. And for, I think it's 18 years now, that private contractor has been Veolia.
Mm-hmm.
That contract is up for renewal. Common Ground is this broad community group, has lots of faith leaders involved in it, congregations, has some political allies. It made lots of hayway with the Sherman Park 10 years ago, but most recently the Housing Authority campaign it had, which resulted in Willie Hines retiring. It's now focused on MMSD, and it has a whistleblower, Steve Jacquart, who was a longtime MMSD employee. It's since going public, has had more whistleblowers saying that there are structural issues with how Veolia operates that are not criminal in nature or anything like that, but that they're not operating in a way that's most efficient.
Okay, so at the April 30th meeting, which is the one you're referencing, right?
Yep.
Whistleblower was there.
I don't know that Steve was there at the meeting.
Okay, so I was just doing some research because you told me we were going to talk about this. So they admitted Common Ground, they couldn't verify everything they were saying there.
And that would be rational because they can't go inside the sewage treatment plant.
So they're saying things, but they don't necessarily have the evidence.
Right. So their call is for an audit, and that this has become right. this big right. political football now.
The contract's up for renewal.
Yep.
Yes.
And so the contract actually expires in 2028. Sorry, you were going to say something.
No, whenever I hear that a contract's up for renewal, I sometimes question why any group, I guess I don't question. I have a different understanding than if it was just a question that you had in a current contract. But whenever you have that, it brings in outside influences to say, we want some business here. Can you jab the company or in this case, the group MMSD to shake the cage a little bit, if you want to use that term.
And so what Common Ground has been clear in what they want is an independent audit. And now we're having a lot of discussion about what does independent mean? The initial position from MMSD and Corey Zetz, who's the chair of the MMSD board, and that's mayoral appointees and the intergovernmental cooperation group that you used to be part of as a mayor of
Oak Creek. I work with MMSD, so I'm not unbiased here. I have a lot of respect for the work they do.
Yeah, and MMSD, we should be very clear, satisfies every federal standard in terms of wastewater. The deep tunnel has clearly been a success.
Here's another dazzling detail. So I did look this up. 18 years of doing the contract with Veolia, 99.95% effluent compliance rate. That's pretty impressive. Billions of gallons of wastewater. I know we all bitch when the storms happen, right? That's part of this too as well. When you have these big events, these big rain events, and things don't get handled in a normal way.
Yes. And so clearly, if you have these insane weather events that we've now had two of in the past.
100-year floods, but not 100 years.
Yeah, 1,000-year storm, and now 100.
Yeah.
You're going to have some amount of flooding. The argument from Common Ground, based on their whistleblowers, who they now have two that have come public, and they say they have more, is that Veolia is doing things that they could have more capacity to treat. There would still be flooding under any scenario, but that there could be a little bit more water being treated. And a little bit, I'm talking millions of gallons.
Right.
But they're doing 80%, and they could be doing 90%. And that's because of some practices that involve a strategy called run to fail, where Veolia is incentivized under the current agreement, apparently not in the new agreement, to run equipment until it fails, because then they can charge it to MMSD to replace it. That's the allegation. Their call is for an audit. The county board is now called for an audit. Yesterday, what happened at City Hall is the Common Council started to push for an audit and was going to hold up the reappointment of some of Mayor Cavalier Johnson's nominees. There was a quick backroom meeting during a recess. They came back out, reconsidered. Mullaly Coggs, who chairs the committee and is one of the nominees, said, I very much favor an independent audit. Now, here's the rub at the moment, is that the independent audit would not have MMSD as a legal entity do the audit or oversee the audit, but the commission, so the commissioners who technically oversee MMSD right. would be in charge.
Yeah.
What Common Ground is calling for is the Legislative Audit Bureau at the state. What others are calling for is get an entire third party, maybe not the state, to oversee the whole process.
I understand all that. Connect the dots for me on Common Ground, why they're involved, because you mentioned some of the groups that are part of that. I don't see the connection.
They've just taken on these big civic issues, and they got a whistleblower letter, and they've pursued this. There's not like something they hope to get out of it besides better operations.
All right, what happens next on this story?
So what we have next is MMSD has said, the commission has said, they now support an audit after initially saying, no, no, no. Corey Zetz yesterday said, I was too strong in my initial comments. I reacted in a way I shouldn't have. And that came after the county board said it. They support an audit, but their definition of independent is the commission itself that oversees MMSD would oversee the audit that a third party would conduct. Common Ground is still calling for a full independent audit where the commission would not oversee it.
All right. To be determined as well.
Yeah, we'll be covering this a lot. It's going to keep moving. There's lots of moving pieces. It's hard to follow because we don't know what all these things are yet.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing when we have these thousand-year floods or whatever they call them, that's when all of the thing literally hits the fan. But we'll dig into that at a later date. All right, we'll have our last segment with Jeremy Jean, who's graciously coming early today because we're going to have Salute to Service coming up, which I'm very excited about, every day this week, Heroes Week, here on WTMJ. We'll continue the conversation with Jeremy after this on 620 WTMJ. Oh, perfect. In the City, Jeremy Jeanine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Check it out. You'd be surprised. The great reporting. Not surprised. It's established that they do great reporting on the city and counties of Milwaukee. All right. A couple data center ones here.
Yes. So we have two things on parallel tracks that are related but not related. One, we talked last December that Marina Dmitrievich, the alderwoman, was pursuing data center zoning regulations. Those have now been released. And it's a tiered approach. Anything below 20,000 square feet, you could build it anywhere. It's zoned industrial. Up to 60,000 square feet, there were some different restrictions you'd have to meet. And then above 60,000 square feet, which is only a fraction of the size of these Port Washington and Mount Pleasant projects, is prohibited by default in Milwaukee. It would require special approval, which requires a series of public hearings. That's moving. The Midtown project we talked about last week was pulled off the city plan commission agenda. Mark Chambers, the alderman for the area, has issued a press release saying he wants to set the record straight that this isn't a massive data center. It's a small corner at the back of a former
Walmart.
Well,
who thought it was?
There was people that read the headline in my article and took it and ran with it and did stuff. And
there's a term for that that's popular, buzzword now, that where people just read the headline and they don't read anything else.
So I should be very clear. There are very, very legitimate concerns about data centers. The project in Midtown is it's a size of the library that's being proposed, facility in the back of the building. And so more details on that. Chambers said he wanted to get more details. He will make sure those are shared publicly. And he admitted that he needs to have a better communication about that. And then the last thing we'll talk about, as it doesn't relate to data centers, but relates to these huge hyperscaling companies, is Amazon is, we talked about, they're doing a Menominee Valley facility. They're also opening a River West facility. They're very explicit that these are all to satisfy this 30-minute delivery network they hope to roll out.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
That's going to be an interesting issue, because what does that do for the roadways? Is that an increase in delivery trucks, or is it actually fine? We'll see.
Drones.
That is something Amazon's also working on.
Yeah. It is absolutely amazing. This is just me waxing because we get a lot of packages at the house, and I'm not ordering most of them, so you can figure out the math on that. How quickly you can get something that, like some random tool, I can get in the same afternoon after I just ordered it. That is just mind-blowing. And then you add drones to the mix, which I probably won't be able to get because I'm close to the airport, and I would think that would be and on a runway path, so probably not going to get drones. But whatever it's like autonomous vehicles, that's going to transform our lives, and we'll need roadways.
It's going to reshape cities, and yes, we'll need roads, and how big they need to be and what they look like, that'll be a big question.
And available airspace.
Yes.
All right, what was your leaf thing? You said you had one more quick
question. Oh, so the Common Council is moving to codify its response to the mayor's leaf proposal. Gerald Krushke, the commissioner, admits that he misstepped by not informing the members ahead of time of his bag policy.
Okay, so do you have an understanding of where you think this is going to end up? Because I don't.
It seems inevitable that 5 years from now, it's probably going to be pushed towards more bagging because it's just the better strategy in terms of picking up the leaves. But people are resistant to change, and you got to communicate change correctly.
So somebody asked an email after you were on last week. Do you live in Milwaukee?
Me? Yes.
Do you push your leaves into the street?
I do, and I mulch half of them, as I've said.
Good. So you're at least trying to do the right thing. I mean, this story is sort of amazing because people forget, and I get a lot of emails on this because there's a couple of, I get the leaf emails. What else do I get? The get off my lawn stuff I generally get because I'm considered the grouchy old man, even though I'm one of the nicest people that works here. Editorial opinion there. It's a cost associated. It's not like a free thing. Everything's, I pay my taxes free. Well, that's not how it works. There's cities, municipalities have costs associated with these services. And as someone who led a city, the costs keep going up. And often levies don't, especially in smaller communities, unless you have development. The levy is frozen.
Yes, that is a real challenge that the costs go up 2% every year and your levy can't match that.
So I'm trying to explain to people when the cost goes up and your levy's frozen, what do you think's going to happen here? And then the answer, having had to make this realization or come to this realization, is services get cut. Now, smart leaders can sort of transform the experience. So let's say your recycling center used to be open every day. Now maybe it's open Tuesday, Friday, Saturday. You've solved a problem. It's not perfect, but it's a solution. That's leadership, and that's what I think it has to happen on this one. All right, next week you'll be back for the regular slots.
I'll be here, yep.
All right. We are going to be doing our 4th of 5. Thank you, Jeremy. Our 4th of 5 Salute to Service honorees. Thanks to Waterstone Bank, Mission 94, our great presenting and the sponsor for the week-long Heroes Week. We celebrate them every show this week, 11:35. You'll hear their stories on other shows as well. I heard twice, I think, on WAN yesterday, yesterday's honoree from the city of Racine, firefighter Noah Curtis. Got a great one today. City of Milwaukee Fire Department, heavy equipment operator. You probably remember the Mother's Day fire. Well, this individual, this gentleman, JP, as he's called by his friends and family, he saved lives. And that is our 4th of 5 honorees. So I look forward to sharing not only his story, but the excitement of the chief of the fire department in Milwaukee. Aaron Lipsy is going to join us as well. He's a great guy. He will be here to sort of tell us all about it.
Honoring those who put their lives on the line to serve our communities. This is Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service. Presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94. Here's Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Kristen is off today. She'll be back tomorrow. I love this week, Heroes Week. And again, thanks to Mission 94 and Waterstone Bank. Every story is different. We've had young firefighters, young police officers. We have a veteran firefighter today. Joining us in studio, the chief of Milwaukee's fire department, Chief Aaron Lipsky. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And heavy equipment operator, firefighter Jermaine Perry. JP, we're going to call you because that's what you said we should call you. You are 4th of 5 honorees for Salute to Service. We're going to hear from you in a second. We have a nice feature that sort of took our interviews from last week and put it all together, but added some music. But you responded to a fire last year, Sunday, May 11th. Chief, I'm going to have you just set this up because this was the Mother's Day fire, 4-story apartment building, and the fire broke out. The Highland Court Apartments, 5 people lost their lives, but the reason Jermaine and JP's here today is because lives were saved.
That's correct, and we've got to remember that part of it. We counted roughly 71 people rescued.
That's an amazing number.
It's I can't think of a time we've had a fire that successful despite the horrible tragedies, and I never want to forget that. But huge demonstration of skill and bravery and know-how and grit, and JP just exemplified that.
Let's hear JP's story.
Wow, well, first of all, Steve,
an attempt to understand the unimaginable after that deadly apartment fire, 27th and Highland, claimed 5 lives.
I'm Aaron Lipsky. I'm the fire chief of the Milwaukee Fire Department.
My name is Jermaine Perry. Most people call me JP. I am a heavy equipment operator for the Milwaukee Fire Department.
I nominated heavy equipment operator Jermaine Perry because there are just certain times when opportunity and preparation intersect at the exact right time. And as terrible as the Mother's Day fire was of 2025, there were a lot of really, really solid performances by Milwaukee firefighters. Our firefighter, Jermaine Perry, was piloting the very first ladder truck to the scene. There are many times you pull up to a fire building and it is visually spectacular just because of the flames issuing from the building, the smoke.
I can see the kids' eyes lit up from the fourth floor.
That was this scene times 100. The third and fourth floor were pushing smoke from all visible sides of the building, numerous windows, and there were numerous people at windows already.
That scene there, that was probably the closest thing to a movie I've ever been in.
This presents a bit of a quandary, because who do you grab first? And you make judgments about who to grab first based upon positioning, based upon where you believe the fire is, based upon the pressure and density and color of the smoke pushing out of the window behind him. I'll tell you what, that's a heck of a burden to bear, and some folks may crack under that pressure.
Firefighters from across the city quickly rushing here to 27th and Highland. The fire chief says when those first firefighters got here, they were far outmatched.
When I arrived on the scene, I positioned the rig in the way I could use the bucket aerial.
Positions that rig surgically. Now, this is not a small light vehicle. This is a heavy ladder truck, and knowing its capability, he uses this 100-foot ladder truck like as an extension of his own arm. And he uses the bucket on the end of that, and he goes up in there.
There's a family of three, and there's a kid, a teenager, and an adult female. First thing I did was I locked eyes on the kid. I almost got tunnel vision, but I knew that I was going to go get him. The sheer terror that the kid had as I was grabbing him, but once I got him into the bucket, you could just see that he felt, all right, I'm okay now. Got those three individuals out, brought them down to safety.
On this terrible day with those five losses, because that's a hard thing for firefighters, I thought it was important to remember that we had 71 hands-on rescues. He executed it flawlessly.
After the event, days, weeks, months later, do you ever meet any of those people that you saved?
No.
You think about them?
I do think about them, but never met them.
Why did you decide to become a firefighter? What was it about this job, this profession, that you said, that's my story?
My father was a firefighter, and I have a brother in the job.
Some people would say, I don't want to do that because I've seen them do it, but that's not you.
Well, that's actually what I said initially. And my dad said, well, why don't you just give it a shot? And I gave it a shot, and I haven't looked back since.
When you think about the idea of a salute to service, what is being selected as one of those five honorees mean to you?
I'm honored and I am 100% humbled.
Salute to service means doing the right thing when nobody's watching, when there is no hope or desire of recognition. H.E.O. Perry, he does the right thing day in and day out. He does this not out of a sense of heroism. He does this because he knows his training and his skills can best be put to work where the need is the greatest. And thank goodness for it, because his service is the best you're going to find. What a better salute to service than somebody who has spent all of their time doing the right thing and doing the hard, somewhat boring, repetitive preparation that on this day saved so many lives.
When I went into work, it was just another day, another shift for me. We have an awesome leader and Chief Lipsky here, and knowing what he used to be like in the firehouse, it's cool to actually let him know that we have it, pushing the culture forward, high level.
I'm going to let you meet Jermaine J.P. Perry after this on Salute to Service Day, Heroes Week, right here on 620 WTMJ.
Back to Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank and sponsored by Mission 94.
All right, let's meet the man of the hour, Jermaine J.P. I'm going to call you J.P. Perry, City of Milwaukee firefighter, heavy equipment operator. We heard the story. First of all, welcome and congratulations.
Wow. Well, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me. This is absolutely an honor, and it's an incredible award to receive. I'm just extremely humbled to be recognized for what was my individual performance that day. But let's be clear. I want to thank all the members of the fire department that showed up that day. Starting off with my company, Truck 9. Give a recognition to my boss, Chris Vogt, who challenged me. He challenged me to get proficient and familiar with that new piece of apparatus that we received.
Describe it to people, because okay. We say heavy equipment. What does that mean? Ladder truck.
Ladder truck. So, yeah, it's exactly that. But this particular ladder truck, if it's not positioned in the right way, you can't utilize the aerial. You can't utilize the bucket. And it's the first mid-mount ladder truck that we had in the city. And again, we were pretty much given the keys to this truck and said, hey, figure it out. There was obviously some training, but we had to take it upon ourselves to get familiar, watch videos, read the literature. And so ultimately we prepared. We received the bucket, we prepared, and then when it came time to execute, we were able to execute.
Take me back to that day, because we heard the chief talk about it. Extension of your arm, I think, is the term that you use, chief, right?
Yes.
That ladder, and then you had to make that decision. You talked about the young child that you saw. You locked eyes.
Correct.
That's part of the process. Is that training, or is that just instinct?
That right there, that was instinct. I mean, it was instinct. It was trust with my company officer and myself, because my company officer, he went inside the building with another member of our crew, and he left myself and another member with the truck to do these rescues. And again, that was trust, and he trusted me to get the job done, and I think I did an okay job.
Texter says, remind you both, it's a 70,000-pound vehicle, apparently. That's about as heavy as it gets, isn't it? Chief, when you hear that, I mean, you obviously were there. I mean, you know the story instantly better than anybody. When you see work being done like this, you mentioned the training, but it's more than that. It's a commitment to saving people's lives and to doing the work of a first responder.
Absolutely. We saw so many excellent displays of this on this day, and I was drawn to JP's story when you asked for this nomination because he put so much time in, and the training is so crucial, but there's an attitude that goes with high performers, and you can't train that into somebody, right? You can control people's time and their behaviors, you know, to some degree, but if you get a high performer like JP, when you ask me how does it feel to hear these stories or to observe this firsthand, I'm the luckiest human being on the planet that I get to work around people like JP.
Absolutely. And we're honored that you're here with us because the story's amazing. 25 years. You surprised me when you walked in last week. There's no way this dude is 25 years on the fire department, but you are.
Yeah, absolutely. 25 years.
No retirement in your near future.
In the near future, but right now I'm feeling really good, and just going to keep the good times rolling.
I'm not going to ask you what salute to service means to you. I know you know the answer, but I want to ask you, why firefighter? Why was this your life's commitment? Why did you decide this was the thing you wanted to do? And you know, you could have done other things. You had some legacy there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have some legacy. Like I said before, my father is on a job. I have a brother on the job.
But you don't have to do that job.
Nope.
You can do a different job.
Yeah, and I think it was more so, you know, like I said, I gave it a shot. I love the camaraderie, the team building, and I love competition, and I love performance, and that's what this job is about. It's about being the best, and again, I love using the word high level because, again, you can be a mid-major or you can be a high-level firefighter, and I like to stay on the higher end.
It has been my honor to have you be our fourth of five honorees for sure. Heroes Week, salute to service. Thanks to the great folks at Waterstone Bank and sponsored, of course, by Mission 94. Chief Lipsky, thanks for the nomination.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
JP, I look forward to you invited me to your firehouse. I'm going to come and have lunch or dinner or whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let us know what you want to eat.
We'll
take care of that.
You got to bring Jazz along, though, too.
We'll bring Jazz. We'll probably bring a couple people because I know you make a lot of food because I've been to a lot of firehouses over my tenure, long tenure, doing the things that I've done. Great honor for you and well-deserved. Thank you for both being here. This is our fourth of five. We got one more tomorrow. It's also a firefighter, a volunteer firefighter. That was the distinction this year. I saw that story. I go, God bless anybody that does the work, but when you volunteer besides your regular job, that's pretty, you know this, Chief.
Absolutely. That is tough, tough work. You're jumping out of bed at night. You're leaving your job. That's a special type of commitment.
All right. Thanks to all of you for listening. We got one more segment. We'll wrap up today's show. Salute to service. My favorite week of the year, and now you understand why that is. Quick break here on 620 WTMJ. Gotta love the Eagles, right? Did you notice we played all Eagles music today? Love that. All right. I told you they were good. That was four of five. JP, Jermaine Perry, heavy equipment operator, Milwaukee Fire Department. Great story. A tragic story because five people were killed, but many, many lives were saved by someone doing their everyday job. But one of the reasons I tell these stories during Heroes Week is that it's a couple things. One, we need more people doing those jobs. That's sort of the marketing side of it, the PR side of it. But two, let's recognize individuals who step up for us. It's their job, yes, but they're committed to helping us often on the worst days of our lives. And if you have that opportunity and you step up in the way that Jermaine JP did, that's worth celebrating. So I take great joy in bringing these stories forward. Thanks to Jazz, producer Jazz, for putting that story, that piece together. You can hear it throughout the day on WTMJ, all the other shows, because it deserves that recognition. And we have the fifth honoree coming up tomorrow at 11:35. And as I said with Chief Lipsky and JP, volunteer firefighter. And when you hear those words, respect, mad respect for firefighters, volunteer. So someone has a full-time job outside of their first responder duties and is responding to calls anytime, day or night. We'll hear from our honoree's spouse on what that reality is like. Not easy. Again, thanks to the great folks at Waterstone Bank. They've been along on this ride with me for many years, and Mission 94, who make it possible as well. We got prize sponsors, Packing House and Botanas and the Aaron Water Show, all gifts and prizes for our honorees. Thanks for listening on today's program. Bill, Joe, Kristen is back tomorrow, and our fifth honoree for Salute to Service. News is next on 620 WTMJ.